This podcast is designed to help you understand the laws of our land. I am your host, Hattie Savari, and here to help you every step of the way, whether you are a tenant, landlord, parent, child, employee, employer, neighbour or business owner, and we are all most certainly consumers. The law is in your life every single day with over 180 episodes and 5 million downloads. Get ready to listen and empower yourself with tons of jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Hello and welcome back to our podcast at Get Legally Speaking. Our legal conversation today will be on domestic building disputes. I am joined by Senior Barrister Tim Sampson from Lamb Chambers in London. Tim is the head of the construction team at his chambers and he regularly acts in complex construction disputes with significant technical or expert evidential issues, including adjudications and in high court enforcement proceedings, as well as leading in the Court of Appeal. He is also has extensive experience in relation to domestic building disputes with such cases through mediation and alternative dispute resolution. Tim, thank you very much for joining me today.
As always, Hattie, my pleasure.
It's a pleasure to have you on my podcast. And domestic building disputes. Now, I'm going to say as it is, I've had my fair share, as you quite well know. And, you know, it's a big area, I think, for lots of people. So according to PBC Today, UK construction disputes have risen by 117% in 2020 alone. And it has been reported that construction disputes are resolved quicker in the UK than anywhere else in the world, apparently. But talking specifically about domestic building disputes, a report carried out by the Federation of Master Builders, also known as the FMB, shows that nearly 90% of homeowners believe that the government should criminalise rogue and incompetent builders, and also that 78% of homeowners support a mandatory licensing scheme in construction to drive up quality, standards and professionalism, and to stamp out rogue traders. So let's talk about the first point that would be a key consideration when looking at getting domestic building works carried out, please, Tim. And we've headed that up as, who are you contracting with? Let's talk about that, please.
Right. Well, it may seem the most simple thing. You phone up the building firm, you know who you're dealing with. But a lot of builders trade as sole traders, so they trade under the name of the builder rather than as a firm. You think you're contracting with that individual. You get your quote in, bottom of the page, 5-point text. You'll discover there's a limited liability company listed there. And something we will discuss later on, one of the problems we have with building works in the UK is that a lot of people enter into contracts for substantial building works. We're talking tens of thousands of pounds here. And there's no proper contract ever signed.
Yes.
There are tenders and quotes. There may be documents such as planning documents thrown around, but no one actually sits down and thinks, right, who am I contracting with? And it's absolutely vital. If you want to enforce any rights later, you know who you contracted with. Because if you've contracted with a shell company that the builder simply runs as a billing process, if anything goes wrong, the builder will just shut that company down the next day. So be absolutely clear. Once you decide you want to contract with a builder, find out who it is you're contracting with. Is it the individual as a sole trader? Is it a company? And if it is a company, it takes nobody more than a few minutes on company's house just to check the bona fides of that company and how long it's been operating and whether it's actually likely to be around in 6 weeks' time after you've paid a lot of money.
Yes. So I have to say, you're completely and utterly right. For some reason, we do tend to have this mentality that we will engage with a domestic builder. And as you say, sometimes for tens and thousands of pounds. But I'm guilty of it myself, and no contract actually gets signed of who you're doing business with.
Well, that's the starting point. Find out who you're dealing with, because all your rights depend on who is the counterparty in the contract. And I've come across far many cases where people thought they have instructed a builder, as in an individual, only to discover they'd contracted with a shell company, that the moment something went wrong, the shell company's wound up, the builder shrugs his shoulders and says, well, not my problem.
I've seen it. It's happened to me. It's happened to me many, many, many years ago. Purchased a new build, actually, and the kitchen was not quite finished. And the builder said, don't worry, after completion, we will do it all for you. We had this all on email as well. I had to issue court proceedings in the end because they didn't come back and finish the kitchen. And they liquidated the company, well, their company, about 2 weeks before the hearing. Now, there was no contract in place and, okay, we had correspondence, but that company, as you say, had gone, disappeared. And the judge said, I'm very, very sorry, Miss Savari, but there's no one here for you to sue.
Yeah, it's a classic problem. And builders have been pulling this scam for more years than I've been around in practice. And will no doubt carry on doing it as long as they can get away with it. Which really brings us into the second part, how it is you're actually contracting with your builder. Now, a lot of people just get, say, I want this works done, I want these windows replaced, or I want this door done, or I want a floor put down. And they get a quote for the work. And that's the limit of the documentation. There's just a price for certain things to be done. Now, that isn't an acceptable contract because you're dealing with works that, as I say, may cost tens of thousands of pounds. And moreover, if you're having works done on your domestic property, that is extremely valuable to you. And if some rogue builder comes in and knocks out a supporting wall and pulls half the house down, you might just want to know who it is you're going to be able to sue, either the contracting party, but whether there are guarantees or insurance backing any of this.
Yes.
Now, some builders will have their standard terms and conditions, which I've seen typically run to a couple of pages. They are, of course, wholly framed in favour of the builder. They are not there to protect your rights, they're to protect the builder and to ensure the builder can
get out of any issues that perhaps may arise. So the key issue here, well, that's actually a very good point you're raising there, because if you're presented with a contract by the builder, as you say, and the ones that you've come across, I'm sure of many, and I've certainly seen a few, are likely to be in the favour of the builder. So perhaps then what we should be saying is take some advice on the contract that you're going to sign.
Yes, and the other thing is don't forget your rights under the Consumer Rights Act, though. The builder simply cannot avoid complying with the basic requirements that the goods provided are fit for purpose and that the works are done in a reasonable standard. It doesn't have to be the very best, but it has to be competent work. And any builder that tried to wriggle out of the Consumer Rights Act provisions, their contract would be very unlikely to be enforced by the court, because the court would say, well, either you have the Consumer Rights Act protection or the contract itself should include such provisions. So you do have a statutory, at least minimum standard to be expected of the goods supplied and the workmanship provided by the builders.
But this is the thing. I mean, I still find it astonishing that the building trade is not regulated. There aren't licensing schemes in place, and there are, you know, rogue traders have been allowed to even exist. I do still find that quite astonishing in this day and age. I mean, the Witch and the Federation of Master Builders together reported that the most common problems that we have with domestic building issues include poor quality workmanship, not turning up to site regularly, the work costing more than the original quote, untidiness and rubbish being left behind, and problems with getting snagging issues rectified, along with the unwillingness of the builders willing to come back and fix things. I mean, that's just some of the issues. We haven't even touched on what happens when the work that's been done has gone wrong or not even been finished. But another key consideration to look out for in a contract, Tim, as we touched on insurance, and that's one of the things that I think is really important. And I think it's actually even important for you to say, can I see your insurance policy? Can I see that it will cover the work that you're going to do in my property? You can do that, right? I mean, why can't you do that?
Well, yes. I mean, if you're doing anything other than the most minor works, you would want to know that the builder has some sort of insurance that would cover them if the works are defective. And in, not just the works are defective, if it then causes further damage to the building. But people don't think about that, of course, until the roofs come down and they go, right, now I need some money to do that. Okay, the builder isn't insured. You go to your insurer as the homeowner, and there's no guarantee that it will cover that.
Well, yes, because so, why should your home insurance cover the fact that somebody else came in and did damage to your property whilst trying to, you know, improve it, I guess, because that's what building works are generally for.
It might do, but don't rely on it. And if, for example, you were operating under, say, one of the industry standard contracts, like a JCT Minor Works, there would be provisions for insurance and warranties and the like. But domestic building works carried out by people on their own houses very rarely rely on what I would call industry standard contracts. Something like the JCT suite of contracts is really for professional builders contracting with other professionals. It's one of the great failings, I think, and we're slightly off course here, but I have a little rant. There
is no, have the rant, Tim, have the rant.
There is no standard form works contract for minor domestic works that is available that is fair to both builder and homeowner, that they can just simply rely on to instruct for works, where the contract doesn't have builder's standard terms that are acceptable. You need something. Now, most people aren't going to sit down and write their own contract, and if they did, they wouldn't get it right anyway. Writing contracts is a complex legal task.
Yes,
no. But we really could do in this country with a basic building contract. And one of the things that could provide for is, for example, a simple retention system. Now, you talked about getting people to come back and do snagging works. I mean, it's the bane of most homeowners or most people who construct builders. The works are done 98% effectively, but there are going to be a list of things that aren't quite right when the building works is finished. The builders have gone. They don't want to come back and spend 2 days going around checking light fittings, making sure the sockets are properly installed. They don't want to come back. They're idle about doing it because there's other better and more profitable work to be done. In professional circumstances, the JCT contracts, FIDIC, there's a retention system. So the builder doesn't get their last 10% until all the works are finished.
Yes, yes.
But of course, you can't just impose as a homeowner some sort of retention scheme unless it's contractually provided for. And most homeowners won't have ever heard of building retentions.
Well, Tim, maybe that's something that needs to be produced and you know, put out there, basic building contracts where people can go in and fill out the dates, the work to be done. Because as you say, there is nothing out there. There is nothing out there. And I, as I said at the very beginning of this podcast, I have also been guilty of it over the years where we have done lots of work to the property that we've been in. And we've not actually said, should we sign a contract? Astonishingly enough. But I mean, this is why probably, again, the FNB has stated that more than half of the people who commission domestic building work have had a bad experience with their builder. You're talking about over 50% of people that have had domestic building works done. And interestingly, research carried out again by the FNB stated that a quarter of people would strongly discourage family and friends from using their own builder. I mean, again, I can fit into that box quite nicely as well, because I had not lots of work done by this one particular company, but a bit of work. And I thought I would never have you again. And I certainly wouldn't recommend you. But so let's talk about the key and important points to look out for in a contract. So let's assume that a contract has been presented to a domestic homeowner who's going to get some work done. What are the key elements? We've already touched on insurance, and I've said, you know, ask to see the insurance policy of the person that's going to carry out the work. You've said, make sure you know who you're contracting with and look them up. But what are the key points, would you say, would be key vital?
Top of the list has got to be price. What is it actually going to cost to get the works done? And is that cost inclusive of VAT or not inclusive of VAT? Now, price is one thing, because you can then vary contracts. Things tend to get added as building contracts go along. if you're going to have a variation to the price, make sure there's a process for recording how the variation is going to work. Because what you don't want is at the end of a building contract, the builder turned up and said, well, you asked for these 15 variations to be done. Here's your bill for another £10,000.
Yes. By joint agreement in writing is a very good idea. And writing could be an email, for example, exchange.
Yes, there's no reason why writing has to be in a formal further contractual document, but make a record of it and find out what it is it's going to cost. Because it's very easy to walk around site with a builder agreeing that all sorts of things should be done on top of what you've already said you wanted. And the builder will happily price that up in his head and present you with the bill at the end of it. So get the, if it's a lump sum fixed price, make sure that's recorded. If there are going to be changes to that price, get it in writing. Now, price also leads to another issue that, and I'll now put my builder's hat on, getting paid. Most building firms are going to go off and get the materials. They want to be paid for the materials before they go and order them, because they don't want liability in case you change your mind. But then what about payment for the rest of the works? If it's just a short couple of days job, no problem. If you're having an extension built where the works might run on for 4, 5, 6 months, is there going to be a monthly payment system? Is there going to be a milestone payment system? So, you know, when the walls go up, you get 20%. When the roof beams go in, another 20%. When the electric, gas, and water goes in, another 20%. If you haven't got a contract, of course, written down, you don't know when these milestone payments are going to be made or periodic payments. And from the builder's point of view, that's where their frustrations come in, because they're saying, well, actually, we've done the work and we haven't been paid for it, so we're going to leave the site. And then the homeowner goes, well, you haven't finished the job because you've left the site. And it then becomes a circular argument about not being paid. So if you're going to have a contract that runs on for a number of months, make sure the builder knows and you know who's paying for what when. Materials usually up front. If it's going to be a monthly payment for labour, get it in writing. First of every month, the bill will be presented. Or if it's going to be milestone payments, make sure the milestones are set and clear and what is to be paid when those milestones are achieved.
From the outset, from the very beginning. So you can financially plan as well. The builder can financially plan as well. And on that point, I think it's also very important to say is, yes, it can be tempting to pay in cash, because I have had lots of builders over the years say, oh, we prefer cash. But let me tell you, it's probably far safer to pay via bank transfer, where the payment can be traced and proved if need be. I had a case where somebody had a whole loft conversion built, and it wasn't a small one. It cost, again, tens of thousands of pounds. The builder convinced them to pay in cash, which they did. The loft then literally, a chunk of it just fell apart and fell through, and water was coming through. The builder disappeared. The company he had went up in smoke, and they couldn't prove that they'd paid him.
Yes, I mean, it's no legitimate business needs to operate by way of cash payments. Anyone asking for large sums of cash is almost certainly a crook. They may be a great builder, but they're doing somebody, usually HMRC.
Love it. Well, it does raise eyebrows and suspicion, Tim. I totally agree. There's no reason to want large sums of payment in cash. It is quite odd.
And the other problem, of course, is if the builder comes along and says, oh, yes, we'd love to do the work, we want at least 50% up front.
Oh, gosh. Really?
Because...
change your mind.
Because they are just the sort of builders that will knock down a wall, half jerry-build something, and then disappear, taking your cash with them. Again, price, periodic payments, all this can be built into a contract. Anyone that just starts demanding most of the money up front is not doing it for your benefit. They're doing it so they can basically take the money and run.
Yes.
The next issue, I think, though, is we think about is subcontractors, because a lot of builders don't do all the works themselves. Make sure you understand what works your builder is carrying out, either person you have a contract with, because you don't have a contract with the subcontractors. So if they do anything wrong, you've got to know that you can reach through to get them via your own builder, because it's sometimes not clear who is doing what work on
Yes,
site.
I think it's important to say if your builder does engage with subcontractors that you have something in writing to say that you are doing business with your builder and anybody that turns up on site through their instruction, they are responsible for the work that they've done, the quality of the work that they've done, payments and everything, because it can get very, very messy very, very quickly, as you say.
Well, yes, what you don't want is a situation where the subcontractors complain they haven't been paid by the contractor and then come and shake you down for the money. It's not your responsibility. And that has a parallel issue, of course, with the goods. Let's say you go off and get your builders out with a lovely fitted kitchen. The builder goes off and buys all the fitted kitchen units from a wholesaler. Who actually owns those units? The builder's paid for them, and there's no transfer of title provision in your contract. The builder owns them. Despite that, you've actually paid for them. So you want a clear title to any goods that's been ordered on behalf of the works that you're carrying out, because you don't want a situation where you think you've paid for expensive materials for the property, the builder disappears, and you discover you don't have any title to the goods, and the wholesaler comes back and takes them away again.
God, yeah, I haven't even thought about that one. I mean, that's just anybody's worst nightmare, really, isn't it?
So, but a standard contract should contain a title provision, a transfer of title provision, to make sure that goods that you've paid for actually become
yours.
And not just the builder's. But equally, you want to make sure exactly when they become yours. For example, let's say the builder orders from the wholesaler and they put them on the back of their grubby builder's lorry and they get damaged. And the builder says, well, it's not my problem. They're your goods now. So usually title will transfer at the point where they are installed into the property.
That's a very
And up to that point, they're the insurance risk of the builder. But again, you need a reputable builder that actually has insurance to cover
yes,
these.
Yes, I think that's really, really key. I really do. Because, you know, at the end of the day, even if you said, right, well, we didn't have a contract between myself and the builder, but however, the builder did have an insurance policy that you've had sight of that covers the quality of their work and covers their work, then there is something there along with the, you know, the law that can help try and protect you. But let's talk about the last point that we're going to cover is, so what immediate remedies are there for people who have had a bad experience with a builder? What are the first and initial steps to take if they really have not been able to resolve matters directly with the builders involved? What do we say?
Right. Well, there are two strands. The first is that dealing with the absolute rogue, the one that's taken all the money up front, done half the work and disappeared. I'm afraid there's probably very little you can do about it, because the chances are you will be chasing shadows. The answer is don't contract with that sort of builder. That may sound sort of slightly facetious, but think about it. Get a contract in place. Have a contract that includes
look
insurance.
Look them up. Go onto company's house, even if they're a sole trader. Get the insurance. All these things.
Insist that there is a proper written contract that specifies the works to be carried out, the price to be paid, the dates for payment, the sort of things that legitimate businesses do. Any builder that just simply walks up, says, well, I can do that work, governor, I'll take cash, £20,000 now, don't go anywhere near them. But equally, there are things can go badly wrong on projects that are properly managed by competent and professional builders. It can just go wrong. There's no building site in the world that hasn't had some problem on it when you're doing works. Now, if you're dealing with a reputable builder, the chances are that if you put in writing what the problem is, they will at least attempt to rectify it. What I must advise is don't just rush to throw builders off site. Say, we're stopping paying you. You haven't done the works to date. In the way I wanted you to do, or you're late or whatever, because there's a real danger that if you stop paying them and throw them off site because you think the works aren't what you wanted, you're in breach of contract and the builder can sue you.
That's a very good point.
Don't rush. If it's a legitimate builder, your remedies against them, if things really aren't rectified by going through the court process, are going to be slow and painful and expensive. So you don't want to get there if you don't have to.
I mean, I would say, and we've experienced this, haven't we, Tim, on cases, get an independent expert to prepare a report. I know it will cost money, but hopefully the report will come out, you know, backing up what you're complaining about. Try negotiating via legal experts and, you know, solicitor or direct access barrister. And I mean, you know, if negotiation via legal assistant fails, then suggest mediation or some sort of dispute resolution to the other side, because communication is always key to avoiding, you know, lengthy and costly court proceedings. It really is a long, drawn out, expensive process, and there are other remedies.
Often this does come back, though, to what you contracted for. If you don't have a proper contract in place, purchaser will always be dissatisfied they didn't get what they specified without ever actually having put in writing what they think they've specified. And the builder will be unhappy because they don't think they've been paid what they should have been paid without ever having put in writing.
Or they might just say,
how much they're going to be paid.
Well, we've seen it, Tim. They might just say, we've done nothing wrong. We've seen it. Yes. We've seen it in a case, actually, haven't we?
We have. But don't just rush to throw builders off-site, because you could find yourself in repudiatory breach yourself, which would justify the builders walking off.
Yes.
And then
yes.
they can sue you for the lost profit on the works.
Well, this is it, because this brings us right back to what we initially discussed with who are you contracting with? Have a contract in place, because if issues arise and people do tend to forget what they agreed to, particularly when it comes to payment terms, if it's all down in writing, black and white, it can be as simple as anything. It doesn't need to be complicated over complex documents or information. At least everybody's got something to refer to that will remind them of what happened. And if it does need to be relied on in a legal process or in an adjudication process, it can be.
Yes. Without betraying any client confidences, I have a case at the moment where the building works are £120,000 and there's no contract. And of course, things have gone wrong. And both sides, builder and homeowner, are hugely dissatisfied. But trying to unpick who's to blame is very difficult, because of course, in any other commercial environment, your first port of call would be the contract.
Yes.
If you don't bother with the contract beyond, here are half a dozen planning documents, here's a one-page quote for the works, you're in difficulty. But most works can be resolved. Most things aren't a complete disaster.
I think if this podcast hasn't put anybody off doing any building works, then nothing else will. But I guess that's not what we're trying to say here. We're just trying to say, look, these are key points to be aware of, things that you should try and have in place, and steps that you can take to try and absolutely minimise having rogue builders in your property, getting work done where a builder decides they're going to wash their hands of the responsibility of it, making sure that you've done everything you can to make your building experience as run as smoothly as possible, with no litigation at the end of it, with no legal issues at the end of it.
Well, yes, and litigation is the last place anyone wants to end up, because it will be slow and expensive, even if you're in the right. And of course, there's always the danger that the builder says, oh, if it goes against me, I'll just wind the company up and move on.
Yes.
No skin off my nose. So alternative dispute resolution, mediation, expert determination, if necessary, both parties agree. Expert can come on site and say, this has been done right, this has been done wrong, this is the price to put right the works, or the builder must be allowed to do it. Or equally, yes, these works have been done properly and the homeowner has to pay X. And yes. Sometimes both parties just need a sort of neutral umpire to take the heat out of a dispute. But there is no reason why domestic contracts for building works should become such a source of problems. The problem arises really because people go into it unsure about what term they should be contracting on, so end up with no contract at all beyond the basic price. And then everyone, homeowner, builder, is dissatisfied because everyone thinks somehow they've been cheated.
No.
Get it in writing, and then there's much less scope for dispute. And I've seen both sides, and it is homeowners are as guilty in some ways as builders in not insisting on getting things in writing, because it leaves both parties exposed if yes. anything goes wrong or there's any dispute down the road, because there is no point you can go back to and say, right, what is it we agreed to do? What was the price to be paid for it? The basis of all usual commercial contracts. And these are, as I say, often expensive works being carried out in relation to your most valuable asset.
Yes, no, so indeed.
So why wouldn't you want to know that these works being done properly are guaranteed or they come with a warranty? But people just seem to rush in. I guess
we're coming to the end of our podcast, but I guess what it is we're just not a nation that automatically thinks domestic building works, where's the contract for it? It's just not something we're programmed to think, Tim. And as I said very early on, I am totally guilty of that, of having done that in the past, where I've instructed expensive works to take place. Yes, there's a clear invoice or there's a clear definition of the works to be carried out, but where's the actual contract? And I have not had one in place. So I just think that hopefully these types of podcasts can help gear people and steer people and help them think about, you know what, I'm going to get some work done, some basic things here that I need in place, starting with making sure I'm working with a company that actually is solid, they've got insurance, we're going to have a contract in place. And then the few points that we raised on, you know, what do you do if you really can't resolve matters directly? But Tim, that's all we've got time for.
And well, I'm sure we'll be back to this subject in the future, Hattie.
Yes, no, indeed. Absolutely. We are going to go into specifics and talk a lot more about this subject, because it is something actually that our listeners have requested that we do. So we don't want to do anything more than provide what people want to hear. So thank you very much for your time today, Tim.
Thank you, Hattie.
Don't forget to click and subscribe to our podcasts, and you can find us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn and YouTube by searching Get Legally Speaking. Also visit our website at getlegallyspeaking.com. Thank you for listening.